Irish Illustrated Insider subscribers. This is Drew Mentock. I'm back with the 26th episode of our bi-weekly podcast series in the feed, Irish Illustrated Interviews, which will now come out on Wednesdays during the college football season. Today, we're sharing a special preseason episode co-hosted by Tim O'Malley and featuring guest college football betting analyst Tim Murray, the host of VSiN's College Football Tailgate Show on Saturday mornings and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. He's also a diehard Notre Dame fan, one of the few teams he still cheers for as a member of the media. Our conversation covers a variety of topics. That includes why he's picking Notre Dame to win the title, the season opener against Wisconsin at Lambeau Field, other future Irish betting lines, and why quarterback CJ Carr may not be the best preseason bet to win the Heisman Trophy. We also discuss why he became a fan, the troubles with calling Navy games during a Notre Dame loss, and more. Before we get started, if you or someone you know has a problem with gambling, call 1-800-MY-RESET for a free and confidential helpline that's available 24/7. Here's our interview with Tim. What's up, Notre Dame fans? I'm Drew Mentock, and Tim O'Malley is also here for a special edition of Irish Illustrated Interviews. Notre Dame opens the season on Sunday at Lambeau Field against Wisconsin. The Irish are a near three touchdown favorite, and according to Yahoo Sports, the most heavily bet team to win the national title on BetMGM. So we had to bring on college football betting analyst Tim Murray, the host of VSiN's College Football Tailgate Show on Saturday mornings and the College Football Betting Podcast. Tim, you also happen to be a big-time Notre Dame fan. If anyone doubts that, just check out his Twitter profile, at @1TimMurray, and you will see him posing with none other than Marcus Freeman. Tim, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, no, it was a fun moment, man. As a lifelong Notre Dame fan, the bowl company I do some side work for has the rights to the Sun Bowl. And I remember waiting for where Notre Dame was going to get announced to go to their bowl game in 2023. And when it got announced the Sun Bowl, I was ready to like put out a tweet like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe they're going to the Sun Bowl. And then immediately I'm like, hold on, I might get to broadcast this game. So yeah, that was a pretty cool opportunity to get to interview Marcus Freeman at halftime. And then after the game, got to talk to the lone captain who played in that game, JD Bertrand, after Notre Dame pummeled Oregon State and got revenge for that 2001 Fiesta Bowl.
Well, I'm glad one member of the media was excited for that trip to El Paso.
The most important you missed, forgot the most important, that it's when you met Tim O'Malley pregame. I mean, that's when we
that's
met.
True. I met the whole crew. I'd already met Pete, but yeah, I met Priester. I met you, O'Malley, pregame. You know, Ryan Harris, I was talking to him and he looked like he was just a short human next to Joe Alt, as they were talking pregame. So yeah, it was a cool moment there. I'm glad they won so convincingly in that particular assignment that I got, however many years ago. But if they're back at the Sun Bowl this year, I don't think I'll be as excited to have that assignment.
You might be there alone. I don't think
yeah. Yeah, I don't think Notre Dame will be there if that's their assignment. So, start. I know in this industry, it's kind of hard sometimes to maintain your fandom, but your Notre Dame fandom is something you've kept. Where does that come from? And maybe what's a seminal moment that kind of made this the team you're going to stick with through thick and thin?
Well, I was born into it. So my dad graduated from Notre Dame in 1973. I am also a ginger Irish Catholic. So I think it is forced upon me just by the way I look that I have to be a Notre Dame fan. But, you know, my dad, I wouldn't call him the biggest sports fan in the world. And I was the youngest of three. My sister also went to Notre Dame, graduated class of 99. But as a kid growing up, I was always infatuated by sports. And really the only day that was sacred, kind of like the Rudiger household, was Saturdays watching Notre Dame. So that passion started there. And it just kind of grew over the years. I certainly, if you ask anyone in my family, even my dad who went there, my sister who went there, my brother-in-law who went there, I am clear-cut the most passionate fan about Notre Dame football. And I think it's because of my passion for sports. And, you know, I'm fortunate to be able to keep a little bit of that fandom, because look, you guys are journalists. I'm not a journalist. I'm a personality. I get to give opinions. So it's kind of nice to keep a little bit of that fandom I don't really have a ton of teams that I'm still super passionate about. I would say Notre Dame and the Washington Nationals, who haven't been good for about 5 or 6 years, are the two teams for me that I'm truly passionate about. But yeah, it started from birth, and I think there were a couple of moments of excitement. I have a little bit of a memory of the 1993 win over Florida State. I actually have more of a memory of the loss to Boston College because we were on a family trip to Disney World, and we were walking around Disney World wearing our Notre Dame gear on that Saturday, oblivious to the result. And like people were coming up to us all across Disney World, like consoling us as if we had lost a family member, like, "Oh, we're so sorry." Like, "What? What happened?" And then we found out later that day. Went out to Hawaii in 97 to watch Notre Dame take on Hawaii. That was a pretty cool trip. I had a thigh-high cast. I had a broken leg, broke my leg about a week before going out to Hawaii. So I remember crutch going up the crutches up the Aloha Stadium, up to the upper deck there. So yeah, there's been so many moments that I've enjoyed it. I've been to like 35 plus games. Drew, I sent you the list that I've been to. I try to go to at least a game every year. There was a little bit of a time where I didn't get to games in 16, 17, and 18 because I had responsibilities on the Navy football broadcast team. But yeah, it's been lifelong, man. And I'm sure we'll talk about it. But this, I would say for me, from an excitement level, this compares to 06. And I know 06 was more fool's gold, but I thought, after the 05 season, how they had played, the buildup, Brady Quinn coming back, Sports Illustrated, the win over Penn State, that kind of got me to a level. But right now, the excitement level from a and realistic excitement level, knowing the depth of this roster, I've never picked Notre Dame to win the national championship. I don't think in my life, maybe 06. I don't know, maybe because I was a dumb college kid. This is the year. I'm not saying they have to do it this year. I'm not saying they wouldn't get it done, but they are from a talent level on par with everybody else in the country.
Drew, it's funny. I was on Tim's show just last week, and he's like, "Are you picking Notre Dame to win the national title?" And it's like, I mean, can I have the field? Because obviously, I will take the field as opposed to Notre Dame. But yeah, we agree though. There's seven teams. The field right now for us both has seven teams. And in my Football Writers Association poll, I had Ohio State one, Notre Dame two, Texas three, Oregon, Indiana, Georgia, and Miami. And I think the drop off from that top seven to eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, at least right now with Stark, we'll know more in 3 weeks. But those teams, if I had to take one, I'd be taking Notre Dame or Ohio State. I like to say when people ask me, are they going to win the national title? I keep saying they are going to play for it. I'm not sure who they're playing it for. So that, I mean, you never know what's going to happen in that matchup, the
I
championship
mean,
game.
look, having it in my backyard, moved to Vegas 6 years
Yes.
ago, and the reality of, Notre Dame, just by pure luck, played BYU just a couple years into me living here in Las Vegas. So that was pretty exciting to get that game at Allegiant Stadium just a couple of years ago, and that would be obviously on another level. I went to the national title game in January of 2013. Went to the Orange Bowl when they beat Penn State. So it obviously would be no doubt in my mind, whatever the pay was, we would be inside that big old Roomba here in Las Vegas. But yeah, man, it's we'll get into the gambling side of it, but it certainly is a team that, I was just thinking back to it. Notre Dame opened up higher ranked or lower ranked, however you want to decide, say it. When they played Ohio State to start the Marcus Freeman era, they were 16, 17-point underdogs. Right now, if that game were played on a neutral field, they'd maybe be a 2-point underdog, maybe, in that ballpark. I mean, that's how much the gap has closed and how well this roster has been put together.
Funny enough, that team in was also ranked fifth, so just one spot ahead of this current Notre Dame team, which is kind of crazy to think about.
No, I mean, and you just think about where they were and the pieces that were on that field that particular Saturday. And they led at halftime. They had a good game plan, but we all knew at halftime this wasn't going to hold, right? And it wasn't like the dam broke or anything like that. They still lost, 21 to 10. But this team is different, and we'll find out Sunday night if they are to that level. I think most of us expect them to be. I think I'm at the point as a fan saying, all right, now I'm starting to be hypercritical and like thinking about, the little cracks in the foundation of where this thing could potentially go wrong. But yeah, I mean, Tim, your running knowledge of Notre Dame is a little deeper than mine. But I think this team is the deepest they've been since the peak of the Holtz era, in the early 90s.
Yeah,
But
like
you will but I will say, and you would attest to this, right? Notre Dame didn't win any title in those. Now, there was no 12-team playoff, but those teams in the 90s probably were better than the 88 team, but the 88 team just was able to beat Miami and not have to have a rematch with Miami in the Fiesta Bowl.
yeah, the advantage of no playoff was pretty big there, although Notre Dame would have wanted a playoff when they didn't win a couple of those titles,
Right.
like 89, 92, and 93, but nobody likes a rematch. So I don't think any fan wants to sign up for rematches of 88 Miami, but my 89 Miami would not want to sign up for a rematch with Notre Dame either. And I guess it's better now. I was wrong about the playoffs. It's a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, look, the 12-team playoff, I kind of thought when it came out, I thought it was perfect to have the home field element, and you guys got to take that in. I was unable to go to that game. It looked incredible to start off the way that it did. To have the bitter cold, too, was just a kind of nice, unique twist to that all. Who knows where we go from here? I don't want 24, but I will say the 12-team playoff, I think, has showcased what I didn't know was possible. The 14 playoff, you could argue, is a bit of a failure in the sense there were so many blowouts. And the 12-team playoff, I think the blowouts have been overshadowed by the really good games, which is hopeful. What we see again this year.
And so you mentioned the Wisconsin game coming up. I think at least I last time I checked FanDuel, that line has held pretty steady around 20.5 points. It's a pretty big margin for a power forward team to open the season. What do you think kind of gives odds makers confidence? Is that something you could see kind of moving as we get closer to the game? And kind of maybe more importantly, how tough is it to kind of gauge a team like Wisconsin, which has a sudden influx in NIL investment and added, I don't know, 35, 40 players in the transfer portal? How hard is that to really predict when you don't know what that team's going to look like?
Yeah, I think it's really challenging. I mean, you look at this past weekend, for example, and you look at an NC State. I think people overlook the fact that NC State lost their two top wide receivers to Power Four programs, Alabama and USC, lost their tight end to the NFL and lost their running back to Texas, and that was a 7-5 football team. They retained the quarterback, but the pieces around him just weren't really that strong. And there was I think an undervaluing of that, if you will. You look at a TCU going across the pond. They lost their starting quarterback to Indiana. They have a new offensive coordinator. They have a FCS quarterback come in, and that they're still 7.5, 8.5 point favorites. So it's certainly a challenge for these odds makers. For us bettors, it's an opportunity to try to figure out, from the knowledge standpoint, where we go. I mean, it's crazy to think, guys, that 5 years ago, when this series was played at Soldier Field, Wisconsin was a 6-point favorite.
Yeah.
And, that might be one of the most misleading scores of all time, 41-13, when it was 13-10 Wisconsin going into the fourth quarter. But you get a couple pick sixes, you get a kickoff return. I mean, that game was just, I had the under in that game. I remember I was sitting next to a Notre Dame fan, and he was like, man, sorry about the under. I'm like, well, I mean, I guess it is what it is. Notre Dame ended up winning the game, but it was crazy how that thing just went bonkers in the fourth quarter. But back to your question, Drew. Yeah, I think you look at 20.5, 21 at one sportsbook here in Las Vegas. There are some people that I know that are looking to take the points with Wisconsin, and there is a over, I don't say overrated, overvalued. The price is expensive, I guess would be a better way to put it, on Notre Dame, because last year, after the two losses, they won every game by double digits. Marcus Freeman, since becoming the full-time head coach of Notre Dame, if you exclude the bowl game against Oklahoma State, they're the best cover team in college football since 2022. Notre Dame is. So, they weren't exceptional against the spread last year, but they were pretty good. So I think there's that, and they're just a public team now. And I think a lot of people are expecting them to go and, beat the brakes off of everybody, similar to what they did last year. And then you have the, kind of the anger factor too. So, books are going to set a number they think is accurate, and then they're going to let the action come in. And I could tell you one thing, there's going to be a lot of action on Notre Dame laying 20 and a half, 21 for Saturday for sure, or for Sunday, excuse me, for sure.
So with that too, I was curious about that. You mentioned the books you think are will set an accurate line. Do they ever take into account that potential public money? Like, well, we know we're still going to get money on Notre Dame. We might inflate this line by a few points to maybe hedge it a little bit or get it maybe more evenly bet.
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I would say that sports books are willing to take a stand. Now, they're going to move how the market tells them to move. Now, I don't move markets, right? I'm just a Joe Blow. There are sharp bettors who are able to move markets. And you know, we saw that, right? For example, going back to the TCU and UNC game, that number opened 6.5. The sharp guys bet that through 7, which is a key number, obviously 7 in college football and football, a very important number, and it kept going. And then you have what's called like a resistance point. So there will be a spot where those sharp guys will come in on the other side. But your average bettor, is not going to move the market. And sports books are willing to take a stand, right? They're in it to make money, right? They are willing to, plant their flag on their power ratings and say, this is where we would believe it's going to be. The sharp guys aren't taking it one side or the other, and we'll just stay here and see what the bettors ultimately do. So, I don't know for sure. I mean, most people aren't going to bet this game until Saturday or Sunday. But, the early betting splits that you can see, we have them over on our website, vsin.com. You will see that most of the bets coming in right now are going to be on Notre Dame, right? And people are going to see 20 and a half and be intrigued by that and say, oh, if they win by 21, then this is, an easy winner for me. So, we'll see what happens on Sunday night. But I don't know where this number goes. It might go to 21 and a half or something like that. You might see a little bit of movement. But to answer your question, books don't necessarily want to like evenly split action, right? Horse racing's called parimutuel, where those all odds move based off of the money that's coming in. There's no house. The house is trying to win. They're trying to beat us, right? So, at the end of the day, I do it a lot on my show, guys, where it's like, if everybody's on one side, I'm going to be a contrarian and look to the other side. And, for me on Saturday when I was doing my show, I was like, you know what? At this point, I'm just going to take UNC. Do I like them? No, but everybody seems to be making the case for TCU. Not many people are saying that UNC has a chance in this game. I'll take UNC plus the points. And fortunately for me, they were able to win the game outright.
I did a little research, Drew and Tim. The last time Notre Dame covered, Notre Dame has only covered. You'll be able to get the last time, Tim, as a Notre Dame fan, but they've only covered as a favorite against a power conference team. So it used to be Power Five, now it's Power Four. Twice since the Holtz era in the season opener. It's a shocking thing. Now, to be fair, they're underdogs a lot in the season opener. They've played some road games in the opener. They've had some bad teams since the Holtz years, but they were favorites in 25, lost to Miami. 21 didn't cover FSU. 20 didn't cover Duke. 19 pushed Louisville. Nice little cheat by me right there. 16 didn't cover Texas. And then I think a lot of fans remember, as we're going backwards, the 2015 season opener, Malik Zaire's golden day against Texas. They absolutely obliterate. I didn't even look up the spread. I knew that they covered that one at 38-3. So that's the last one. And prior to that was 99 against Kansas. Now you got
Hold on,
some rough
hold on.
games.
Can I fact check you real quickly?
Yeah,
So
yeah.
is it just wins? Because they covered against Ohio State.
No, you gotta. I'm sorry. You gotta as a favorite. Cover as a favorite.
Did they close a dog against
As
Michigan?
yes, they closed as a dog against Michigan.
Really?
2.5 points. Yeah, and even
Wow.
I got
See,
another cheap one for you.
and that's an
11 and a half.
indicator of sharp money, right? Sharp money, if I
Yes.
remember, came in on Michigan late there, and I think the public was more so on Notre Dame. So okay, so.
So late, Tim. It was like while we were at the stadium, like
Yeah, I
about
remember that.
favorite. Yeah,
Because
and
Notre Dame all throughout, and we might see something. Look, we're not going to see a drastic move, but you do see that late rush of money, that sharp money that will move. If I remember correctly, I want to say there was a late push in the Orange Bowl against Penn State, where I want to say Penn State might have closed as a very slight favorite.
I think because the Jeremiah Love injury news really hit maybe late,
Yeah.
you started jumping on that. Yeah, I think Penn State ended up being favored by 1.5 in that,
Yeah,
which.
but that was one of those funny ones where the Michigan game was lying. I mean, they set these lines for 3 months in advance, right?
Yeah, opener. Yeah,
And
it was.
it was just sticking at like 1.5. Notre Dame was favored all offseason. And then right before kickoff, here comes that money. And me being the normally pessimistic Notre Dame fan seeing late sharp money, I'm like, oh my God, it's over. We're gonna lose this game. And I remember, fun story. So I remember I mentioned that I was on the Navy broadcast. We were Navy played Hawaii that night. It was a 11 p.m. Eastern kickoff. So Notre Dame was playing at 7:30, I want to say that night. But I had to do like a Navy preseason, show. And I was very, very much like looking up at the TV, like, yeah, and it's gonna be a big year coming up for the midshipmen. But yeah, I remember that one vividly. The Chris Finck catch, one of the more iconic catches in recent history.
Yes.
Since you brought up the Navy thing again, we talked a little bit this about off air. You also had to, while covering it for Navy, had to be there for a Notre Dame loss. So what was that experience like, and how was it doing that job while also being disappointed that Notre Dame lost to Navy?
All right, so first and foremost, hey, mutual respect, right? Notre Dame and Navy, right? I love Navy. I've got almost more Navy gear than Notre Dame gear. Shout out to the Navy folks. They took care of me, man. I would get like a box of just Navy swag, and I would just go to a studio. I wasn't even really going on campus, so they treated me so well. Let's go back a step. 2007, when Notre Dame's winning streak comes to a close.
Ooh, that's the one, huh?
Yeah.
Junior year of college, and there were knuckle marks in the mini fridge in my room after Notre Dame finally saw the winning streak come to a close. My friends still razz me about that game because I was despondent thinking that I thought Notre Dame would never lose to Navy, and then lo and behold, they would lose three out of the next four against Navy. But yeah, going to 2016, and what I would do with that job. So I was not on site in Jacksonville. I was back in Baltimore, where our radio studio was, and I would be in the I wasn't in the studio. I was in kind of the control room, and I would edit up sound, edit up highlights. So like, if a touchdown was scored, I would edit that highlight, and I'd run into the studio, and we'd play it back coming back from break. And I did the halftime show, I did the pregame show, I did the postgame show, and man, I should win like an Emmy or something like that for my faking of excitement in that game. I think I threw pens around the newsroom in that one. I have become friends with Mike Sanford, and I give him a lot of crap for that game. I'm like, what was going on, man? How did you lose? And he, I think, had just had like a baby or something, like one of his kids who's now my kid's age.
Exactly. No, he definitely does. Yes.
Yeah, so I think he told me he was still wearing the hospital bracelet from like his son being born like that Friday and then going down to Jacksonville. But yeah, it was, if I remember correctly, 2017 was the game where Jalen Smith, I think, had a they were gonna throw they wanted to throw a halfback pass.
2013 at South Bend. Yeah, it
So
was
there was a
13.
20 I was a student in 2017 against Navy. It was uncomfortably close.
Yeah, oh, Greer Martini stops
Yeah,
it.
that's what it
Yeah.
was.
Yeah.
And they like they
Yes.
were gonna they almost scored a touchdown, and if they had scored a touchdown, I was 24-17, I want to say, was the
Yeah,
score.
that's the exact score.
If they had scored the touchdown, Niamatalolo told me they were gonna go for two and try to
Oh,
win the game.
yeah. They were going to get it too.
Yeah, and they were gonna get it, no
That
doubt.
was
And then 2018, Notre Dame crushed him in San Diego. And I was like, oh, tough loss for the Mids. And I was just like, with a big old smile on my face. I'm like, finally, I don't have to be stressing about this Notre Dame Navy game.
Well, we'll have to write somebody about getting you that Emmy, 'cause after I listen to it, of course. But
I gotta find the tape somewhere.
yeah, submit it, put it as part of your reel
Scott
for
Strassmeyer,
sure.
don't get mad at me. I still love Navy. I'm pro Navy. It was just, you know me, one game a year. I was faking it a little bit.
So you also over the summer put out DraftKings does the college football games of the year. Notre Dame had four other lines for the season. It was the North Carolina game. Notre Dame is 24.5 point favorites. BYU 11.5. Miami 7.5, and SMU 17.5. So almost all double digits. I'm guessing other than Miami, they'll likely be a double digit favorite. We'll see how things actually, start progressing in the season. But I mean, is there any of those games that really jumped out to you? I mean, the North Carolina game is pretty big. They looked okay over the weekend
Yeah.
and in week zero. So wonder if that might be a better Bill Belichick team than some people are anticipating.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was texting with Matt Grill, who is a trading manager at DraftKings, and he sets the college football lines. And I was curious, what action they've seen on Notre Dame this offseason. So on the national title front, they went from, I think they opened 10-1, they're down to 6-1. So he said lots of action over the summer on the national championship, getting them down to 6-1. And he said they actually bet, the sharp guys actually bet against Notre Dame in three of those four games, Miami, BYU, and UNC, because he felt like his numbers were a little bit high. And I think the one that a lot of people thought was too high was BYU. That opened 11.5 down to 10 now. And I understand the mindset of that one. I got very excited listening to Irish Illustrated a couple weeks ago. John Bryce basically indicated that that's going to be an afternoon game. And I was like, oh, that is a huge relief. You don't want that game, that madhouse at night, man. I don't want that nonsense. So if that's an afternoon game, I think that's a huge win for Notre Dame. I'm not as high as BYU as many others are this year. I think they'll be good. I think Kalani Sitake and his squad is always kind of buttoned up. But I think we did see a little bit of a weakness, right? They just weren't athletic enough when they played Texas Tech a year ago in both of those games. And to lose their, I believe, three top receivers, I just think they're going to have a really tough time having success through the air. They're going to try to grind that game out. LJ Martin is back, a really good running back. Bear Bachmeyer might take a step in the right direction. But I wasn't necessarily, I knew a couple people that I respect that immediately jumped in on BYU plus the points. And I understand it. I love betting on home dogs, but that was not one that I was necessarily crazy about. The one, I mean, look, I think it's obvious. To me, the game that is scary is Miami. I think Miami's better than last year. I know they lose Reuben Bain and Akeem Ezidore. What they did to supplement, I think Darian Mentz's ceiling is higher than Carson Beck. To bring in Cooper Barkate to go along with Malachi Toney. Mark Fletcher's back. He was an absolute monster in the playoff. Offensive line, I think, has some issues, but I think those will be probably figured out by the time they come to South Bend in November. So Miami is, as a touchdown favorite right now for Notre Dame, give or take, that's the one where I'm like, Miami could just be that good and come in, and that could be a potential war. Obviously, the motivation, the revenge angle, the atmosphere, I think, and I'm curious, I'll ask a question to you guys. That's going to be the best atmosphere in Notre Dame Stadium since when? Is it Indiana? Is it USC in 2005? It Clemson in 2020. Obviously, no one was, not enough people were there. I'm just curious if that game rivals 05 USC, if it's two undefeated teams playing each other in early November.
Indiana was great, but the one thing Notre Dame fans really get up for is when there's someone to hate.
Yes.
If they lost Indiana, that would have been, I know Indiana became a great team and a champion, but if they'd lost that Indiana team, that would have devalued the whole season. The bloodlust for USC in 05, Miami in 88 and 90, and Florida State in 93 can't be topped. They hate that, the absolute hatred of those fan bases from Notre Dame fans. I mean, if USC came in this year, it might be worse than Miami just from what's gone down. But I think it'll be fit. I think it's going to be an amazing atmosphere. And
Yes.
I was IU was electric because it was the first ever college football
Yeah.
playoff game. Everyone there expected Notre Dame to win that game, other than the IU fans. But it was I think it would just it'll be a very hungry crowd. Michigan was really, really good, especially in 14 when
I was at that game. That was
yeah.
awesome.
When it was the last game, because
Yeah.
the contract wasn't signed. I would say that was a low key big one.
I had a Michigan fan behind me, and I think, if I remember correctly, Tim, I believe the game started with timeout, false start by Notre Dame. And the fan behind me was like, oh, here we go. And that guy did not talk the rest of the night.
No, he did not. Yeah, Drew, would you agree that like the bloodlust is going to be at a higher level than you could have for even for IU's awesome crowd that night?
I agree. I think maybe if they play an IU again in under the circumstances, now there's a little bit more hatred there. But I think just even with how Notre Dame got left out of the playoffs with Miami jumping them, like I think this is a renewed rivalry. And I had Patrick Creedon, who directed Catholics versus Convicts, on this podcast in the past, and he agrees this is the peak since that 1988 game with this rivalry. Like there is some serious bad blood here that I think People are just going to want revenge, and they're pumped. It's in November, and Miami's going to have to come up here and presumably deal with the cold. So I think all that's just adding a lot of
I
hype to
mean,
this game.
it's so big that people are coming from Vegas and renting O'Malley's house. I mean,
Right.
that's
Yeah,
how big this event is, you know?
that person may or may not be broadcasting from that spot as well. So that's going to be a big deal.
Well, I do wonder with this game too, like the maybe the 7.5 would make more sense if this were the opener and with kind of all the different moving pieces with Miami, whereas giving them time with that schedule to kind of get Mensah and the
Yeah.
defensive line and the offensive line. I mean, they have a maybe the most talented freshman offensive lineman in the country starting, but it's, you know, Jackson Cantwell still gonna have, you know, half of, you know, 2/3 of a season to get warmed up for that game. I wonder if that kind of changes your perspective on that a little bit too.
Well, and that's why they're game of the year lines. So as a better, you know, and I don't typically bet into game of the year lines all that much. I'd rather bet, you know, win totals and futures and whatnot like that. But I know a lot of people who are anticipating line moves. So what will happen is this number is going to come down and it won't reemerge more than likely until October or maybe even the week of the game, right? So you as a bettor are trying to predict which way this line is going to go. And that's why I think a lot of people, if they were to get involved in this game, it was north of 7, you probably would take it. There was another sports book out there, I think BetMGM opened it at 5.5. So you also might be doing what bettors call trying to middle it. You want to take Miami +7.5, take Notre Dame -5.5, game lands 6 or 7, and you win both sides of the bets. So that's what a lot of, you know, pro bettors will do with those game of the year lines. Obviously, we in the media love to talk about it from a talking point. It gives us kind of a feel of where they are from a power rating standpoint amongst the eyes of odds makers. But yeah, that number will come down. And, you know, I'm very curious to see what it will be because, you know, I look at this Miami team, I look at the schedule. Now, Miami historically under Mario Cristobal has had a clunker or two on that schedule. And that's a big reason why Notre Dame is not in the was not in the college football playoff a year ago. But man, that Miami team, it is pretty crazy to think that Miami has been in the ACC since 2004 and has never won the ACC championship. But if they don't win it this year, man, something has gone massively wrong. They are so much better than everyone else in that conference, and they don't play Louisville or
Right.
SMU this year.
Right.
Drew, I wanted to interject really quickly. Tim, if both teams look great, undefeated going into that, they both could be because Miami has that Clemson, Notre Dame has that BYU. If both teams look great, I still think the line comes down a little bit.
I think
If they
so.
both look great,
Yeah, I think,
it's
Tim, I think you're probably, because I would say, you know, the big question nowadays, and in the NFL, like home field is nothing. Sports books have downgraded home field to like 2, 2.5 points in the NFL. College is still different, right? There are certain atmospheres that are going to give you an extra 3 or 4 points. And you guys would attest, I think Notre Dame at its peak is probably like a top 15, top 10 type of atmosphere. There are times those afternoon games, they can be a little sleepy. And then, you know, the home crowd might not be that great for it, but this is going to be different. I think this will probably be a home field that you're giving a full 3, maybe even 3.5. And that's where you're going to look at the power rating and see how much it's changed. And I think there's a reality where Miami improves and Notre Dame looks really good. And, you know, Miami is maybe just 2 points worse than Notre Dame or something like that. I, like you said, to start this off, Tim, I include Miami in that 7 of teams that can win the national title. I think they've got the talent and, you know, they've got that dude too. Malachi Toney is that dude. That is going to be quite the battle, assuming that we get what we want, which was what we got last year, which was one-on-one Leonard Moore and Mekhi Lemon. But hey, look, Leonard Moore's going to be tested this weekend, so we got to see
That's
what
right.
happens
I
first
saw
here. You
that.
know, he's going to be tested this weekend.
I had to put out the Stanford stats from last year when they tried to test him. I think they threw at him 7 times, 3 pass deflections, a pick, and 2 catches for 9 yards. So I think it was a 1.3 yards per attempt his way and an interception.
We actually asked him post game, "Have you been throwing it that much?" He's like, "Yeah, that was crazy, wasn't it?" I couldn't believe it was happening that way.
I
So.
mean, I don't know about you guys, but you remember that 2021 Cincinnati team that came into Notre Dame. You know, Sauce Gardner, I don't even think they attempted to throw at his
Right.
side of the field. And like, that's kind of my vision for what this year is going to look like for Leonard Moore. It's like, I think Leonard Moore's numbers are going to be underwhelming because outside of Luke Fickell, I don't think anyone's going to throw the ball in his direction. I mean, Miami will because they have a guy that can go toe for toe with an elite player like that. But I think Leonard Moore's numbers are going to be underwhelming. And I think, what was it, Kobe Bryant on the other side for Cincinnati, who had like 8 or 9 interceptions. I think he won the defensive back of the year award
He
that
did. He
year.
won the Thorpe. Yeah. Yeah, he was like a
So.
third round pick or something too, or maybe later. So, but then you had the number four overall pick that year. Just yeah, because no one was throwing his way.
Yeah, so maybe we need to look at some futures, maybe some cornerback interception props for whoever's on the opposite, so whoever wins out that cornerback two role.
I was going to say 48 targets in 12 games. I just looked for Leonard Moore last year. I'm not sure you're getting 48 targets in 12 games this year.
No, I don't think so.
So going back to the Wisconsin game this weekend, you said this is the year you're picking Notre Dame. I'm curious, what do you want to see out of them this weekend that would give you confidence that your preseason pick is something you still want to go with?
Yeah, I think the offense is the main thing that most of us are looking for. I guess defensively, I'll go, flip it back to the defense. If Boubacar Traoré looks like, whoa, that dude is going to be Reuben Bain part two or something like that. I mean, look, we saw it last year in Miami. We're like, those two guys are different that are coming off the edge for Miami. And if we see that from Notre Dame's defensive front, I think that is going to get me pretty geeked up. The depth of the D line. I know what to expect from the linebackers and the safeties. Look, if they struggle, then I get worried, but I don't anticipate that to happen. I think offensively, that's where it is, right? It's like, what are we going to see? You guys have seen a little bit of Mylon Graham in person, but is he going to pop? Is Greathouse going to look like he looked, in the college football playoff a couple of years ago? Is Jordan Faison just going to continue to be a guy that you just can't cover in space? That's for me what I'm looking for. I think I know what I'm going to get from CJ Carr. And then lastly, Tim, you mentioned this when you joined me on my podcast. Is the offensive line going to be dominant? And I think that is nationally, I would say one thing, if I had to say two things nationally, because I listen to you guys and I consume all the content that's out there, I think the two things that are being overlooked nationally, I think number one is folks who cover the team like you guys seem to be confident in the running back situation. I think the easy discussion is, oh, Notre Dame lost two first round running backs. They're going to be a step back there. Yeah, obviously a little bit, but they're still going to be very productive running the football. That's one that I think the national media is incorrect on. I think there's an assumption out there that this Notre Dame offensive line is just going to bulldoze people all year. And you look at Phil Steele's ratings. You look at my buddy Brett Ciancia at Pick Six Previews. They both have them as like a top five offensive line. I think Phil Steele might have had them number one, but there was a misconception about Jagasaw, and you guys had that realized too. So I think for me to continue the confidence, not that Wisconsin is expected to be a monster defensively, but do they look like a Joe Moore Award finalist? That's what you said, Tim,
That's
on my
yeah.
pod. If they're a Joe Moore Award finalist type of line, then I'm going to come away and be like, yep, all right, we're in good shape here moving forward.
It's if you I've been drilling down this point a lot, but people don't love it because it's negative. Let's pretend Jagasaw isn't the best lineman on the team. Let's pretend he's fifth. Okay. They are still down. They're fifth, sixth, eighth, and ninth best lineman already. Because Chris Terrick would be in the two deep, and he's already out. You're moving Stiles Prescod from left tackle, backup left tackle. He's the fourth guy they've tried at right guard, only because they couldn't try Terrick at right guard, also, who was playing center. I mean, I think they're fine now, but if you get another weird injury in there, it gets rough. If you, I mean, you can't count on Jagusa. You can't count on Matty Augustine, maybe by that Miami game, that broken fifth metatarsal really early in camp. That is a refracture. That's why he had the surgery. That plagued Kevin Austin. He did not have the surgery, and he refractured it during the football season. Broke at the exact same time, by the way, as Matty Augustine. They should be a really good offensive line. But if they're a great offensive line, this is moot. They're going to go out there and they're going to go 12-0, and it's not going to be a big. If they have a great offensive line, it's a wrap. I mean, it is literally a wrap if they have a great offensive line. I just don't know if you can have a great offensive line when you're down Jagusa Absher is not what anybody, if they're trying to replace him, is he what they predicted? I don't know. Everybody thinks Matty Augustine was going to beat him out. You're down a couple backups. It adds up over time, but it's a first
Well, and that's the biggest
problem.
thing, Tim, I would say about Notre Dame and looking at the landscape nationally. And, the reason I had you on the pod and I had six other people talk about those six teams that we discussed was you got to nitpick a little bit. And for Notre Dame, the depth is one of their massive strengths, right? The fact that you guys have talked about it, the linebackers, the fact that KVA is not a projected starter is just laughable, right? Jalen Snead is not a. Is a guy that could come off the bench. You look at the depth in the secondary. You look at what they have defensively. I think that's a reason to be bullish on Notre Dame. But when you're nitpicking, and that's what you have to do when you're an elite team, the nit to pick is that offensive line. And one more nick on that offensive line. What does it look like? So we'll see. Fortunately for Notre Dame, you're not playing Miami in week one, and
Right.
you're not playing BYU in week two, right? There is a little bit of a build up there, which I think is obviously positive, and hopefully some of the health comes back there for the Irish. But to go back to Drew, what you asked initially, which was come away feeling confident. If that off, if CJ Carr looks clean after that game and looks like he went out for a 7-on-7 drill, then yeah, I'm gonna feel pretty good, coming out of Lambeau Field on Saturday night
And that's actually the
or
last thing I
Sunday
want.
night.
Ask you about it. Is CJ Carr, he's the current Heisman Trophy favorite, according to at least FanDuel, which I have pulled up. Notre Dame hasn't had a Heisman Trophy winner since 1987. Tim Brown won it. What are your thoughts on him being the favorite, and what do you want to see from him, and what kind of numbers do you think he might need to have to be a serious contender when we get towards the end of the season?
I think this is it's tough because if Notre Dame goes 12-0 and CJ Carr does what we expect him to do, he's obviously going to be in New York. I just don't think he's going to have gaudy numbers this year because I think there's a reality where Marcus Freeman and this staff, and I think even to CJ Carr, I don't think they're in it for the personal accolades. I actually really believe that. And well, winning a Heisman Trophy is obviously an honor that you'll have for the rest of your life, and you could come back to Notre Dame and sign autographs and have the Heisman Trophy there. That did happen to me once. I forget which Heisman Trophy winner it was, but there I did have a picture with the Heisman Trophy winner at Notre Dame. It wasn't Tim Brown. I was
Maybe you'll remember that one because it's different.
oh man, one of the guys from like the 50s. Yeah, I those I'm I don't think he's going to put up crazy numbers because I think he's going to be out a lot in the third and fourth quarters, more so the fourth quarter. So is he going to have some big moments? Yeah. And if he has his Heisman moment and throws for 350 against Miami in an epic shootout, then yeah, he probably has a chance to win the award. And, historically, the best quarterback on the best team has a really good chance to win the award. The way I took, I put a little bet in, not on him to win the Heisman. I actually put a bet in on him to win, to become the number one pick. DraftKings had it at +650. I think FanDuel's a little shorter. I just think there's a reality. You listen to some of these evaluators, and Todd McShay's one that is just, he went down to the Manning Passing Academy and he was the best and it wasn't even close. And it's like, whoa, to hear that. And I don't think of McShay as a guy that is trying to get, clicks like a Paul Feinbaum or something like that. I think he tells it how it is. So for me, the price on him to win the Heisman is just too short. I think the number on Arch Manning is too short. I think you could kind of wait and see how the year's going. And I just don't think, guys, it'll be drastically different from now to, let's say, the week of the Miami game. And then at that point, you might say, all right, now at 4-1 or 5-1, maybe I look at CJ Carr if he goes crazy against Miami. But look, I think the difference, and I was texting with a buddy of mine who works over at Fox Sports, and he was like, hey, man, can you give me a write-up on this Notre Dame team? Are they going to win at all? I'm like, look, the difference is no knock on Everett Golson. No knock on Ian Book, no knock on Riley Leonard. Those guys aren't first round picks. Like Riley Leonard's on an NFL roster. He's a good quarterback, but he also overthrew passes against Northern Illinois and led to a loss there. Like that's not going to happen with CJ Carr. Even Brady Quinn, I think, has alluded to that. He thinks CJ Carr is a better quarterback than he was at Notre Dame. So that's the trump card that they have. And Tim, I know you've banged the drum on this too, which is if you put an elite quarterback on one of those teams in 18 or 20, what do they do?
Right.
I don't know. And I think you have an elite quarterback and you have an elite roster. And that's why when you think back to 2022, Notre Dame was a 17-point underdog to Ohio State. When you think back to 24, Notre Dame was an 8-point underdog to Ohio State. If they played right now, they'd be a 2-point underdog, maybe a 1-point underdog to Ohio State because they have that guy that they have not had since Brady Quinn, and he's probably going to be a higher draft pick than Brady Quinn too.
Ironically, Drew and Tim, for him to win the Heisman, the Miami game probably has to be close. He probably has to rally them
Yeah.
from behind and throw a winning touchdown pass. So it'll be a heart attack for Notre Dame fans en route to the Heisman because you probably do need that Heisman moment when you play poor team. It would just grab everyone's attention, the voters. It does happen that way because you guys could remember immediately Fernando Mendoza's most important play last year was that touchdown pass at Penn State. And if that
Right.
doesn't happen, if they win by 12, I don't think there's a Heisman moment in there for Fernando Mendoza, and more people might have jumped on my Jeremiah Love bandwagon on my Heisman vote.
I think
Yeah,
that's
and
a
that's a
good.
unique, yeah, and that's a unique challenge, Drew, is that obviously we know that Notre Dame doesn't play in a conference, so there's not that rebuttal. And look, don't get me started on the Heisman voting situation. I think it's outdated. Way too many people vote on it. Not enough people who watch the sport vote on it. And you look at that final opportunity, Bo Nix was going to win the Heisman Trophy if Washington, or excuse me, if Oregon beats Washington. He doesn't, and then Jaden Daniels, rightfully so, wins the Heisman Trophy. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting kind of roller coaster to watch with CJ. But I think, to be honest, from if I'm giving betting advice here, I would not bet CJ Carr right now. I would just wait and see what the number is before the Miami game. If they're undefeated, it's probably like 3 or 4 to 1 because you also have to remember this too. I know this is a Notre Dame pod. People listening in are know more about Notre Dame and less about every other team. It's the year of the quarterback. The quarterbacks this year in college football are outrageously good. So I think there's going to be just ebbs and flows of, Trinidad Chambliss at the same time Notre Dame's playing might go off for 6 touchdowns against Louisville and he might become the betting favorite. Jaden Maiava might beat Oregon, which is, we could make our jokes about USC, but like, there are so many different big games. Josh Hoover, taking on Ohio State, or flip that, Julian Sain taking on Indiana. Like, there's just going to be so many ebbs and flows. So the Heisman moment is going to come, if it does, November 7th. So if I'm giving a little advice, I don't know. I'd say I'd wait until the week of, and then, we'll party at the O'Malley house afterwards
Right.
after they win that game,
All right. Well, with that, we really appreciate you being here today, Tim. This is a lot of fun, and I think we got some pretty good information in mixing up this episode of Irish Illustrated and interviews today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Awesome.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tim. Thank you, Drew. Thanks for letting me join.
Yeah, thank you. And with that, we'll be back again in 2 weeks. See y'all.